This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Tinfoil hat time, you guys. You know I love a good conspiracy theory. I don't like the harmful ones. But sometimes they're fun. You know what I mean? Sometimes they're fun. What's going on with Kylie and Timothy Chalamet?
You don't like them the way I like them.
That's true. I don't go all like Illuminati the way that you do. But I love a good sports conspiracy theory. You know, who were the Griffey three? The three that didn't vote for Griffey. You know, was the envelope frozen? Did MJ really leave, because of a gambling thing? All those things. This is a little more of a... put the pieces of a puzzle together when it comes to the Mariners offense kind of conspiracy theory. We don't know the truth of why the Mariners offense is struggling so much because, in truth, there are so many factors.
Mm-hmm.
So many factors are at play. Team philosophy, execution, how the team was built, where they're playing, all of this stuff. So I asked a question, Bump, of listeners before the show, and it's one that I'm about to ask you and us, which is, look, the Mariners won their sixth consecutive series against Houston, which is very cool. But they have the highest strikeout rate in the league,
yep,
which is not very cool. So why has the offense struggled so much?
Conspiracy theory time, right? There's one aspect of this whole thing that we talk about often, or that is mentioned often, and that is the environment in which they play in here in Seattle. You are by the water. There's something called the marine layer. It makes the air thick. Read an article by Adam Jude. He said, look, man, the ball can travel 6 feet less than it does, mm-hmm, on a regular day when the atmosphere is nice. So that's true. It's like saying it's cold outside, but I don't need to wear a jacket. Yeah, it's cold outside, so you wear a jacket. When it's cold and dense outside, the ball's not going to travel as far. And T-Mobile Park is one of the lowest producing parks in baseball when it comes to runs, right? So that's real. You got to look at the environment and say, all right, the environment's part of it. But they were on the road yesterday, Stacey. I don't know if you knew. They weren't at T-Mobile Park. They were on the road in Minnesota. So we got the home aspect of this thing of the atmosphere. And now once you travel on the road, what is it? And I'm just looking at the pitches these guys are swinging at, and I'm saying, all right, they're chasing a bit. Let's look at the league average when it comes to chase rate. I think it's like 27% or 25%, and we're chasing 27% of the time. When it comes to contact, the average is 55%. Chase contact here is like 51%. So there's something there. The whiff percentage for the Mariners is 27. League average is 25%. There's something in the swing selections, I'm going to say, when it comes to these Mariners that just ain't clicking. So there's a couple of things I think. I think at home, it's the atmosphere. On the road, it's just guys being disciplined and having the approach. We were talking to Curtis before the show, and you listen to Cal Raleigh describe an at-bat. And he goes, look, I was just waiting on the fastball. All right, what if you don't get that fastball? Then what are you going to do? You have to adjust. You have to be balanced. You have to be able to react to these off-speed and breaking balls. And it seems like they're just not doing that. And the part that hurts me the most is that the guy leading the charge ain't doing that, and that's Julio. So there are a couple things I think you can attribute to this offensive struggle. But the funny thing is, this is why we talk about the Mariners the way that we do, because we are excited about the wins, but we're also like, be careful, because this style of play is going to show up and it's going to get you. Even if you're playing against the Twins, who have won, 12 of the last 13 games, averaging 6.6 runs per game, they're hot. They didn't really play anybody, but they're hot. So, yeah, there's a bunch of things. That's my TED Talk. What's yours?
Mine is... Let me build to mine for a minute, because I do want to talk about some of the factors I have considered. The marine layer, like you said, is not a huge factor. It may not even be a notable factor. It is a small factor. Like you said, Adam Jude wrote about that. They interviewed a meteorologist. He said, look, you're at sea level. You're playing in colder air. First pitch temperatures for the Mariners so far have been the third coldest ballpark in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And cold, dense air reduces the distance of fly balls by 6 feet on average. However, in this same article, they said the physical effect of the marine layer is minimal. And then they went on to wonder, mm-hmm, whether some of this was just mental. So even in this article where they were like, yes, there is a real effect with atmosphere on the distance that a baseball can travel. But what might have even more of an effect on things is the mental kind of hurdle of a player and the talent and the execution. Like those things all have a significantly greater factor on what happens in a game than does colder, dense air. Now, ballpark factors are real. Someone texted in, well, other teams have no problem getting home runs in our ballpark. That's not actually true. While other teams do come here and we've seen other offenses come here and be successful, more than any other park in baseball, T-Mobile Park has limited run production. It allowed the fewest runs in 2023. You can go look on StatCast for what's happening this year and what happened last year. On the opposite end of the spectrum, it will not surprise you in any way. You can guess it right now, is Coors Field. But like hitter-friendly parks, Coors Field, Fenway, Great American Ballpark, Kauffman Stadium, the Nationals Park, Globe Life Field where the Rangers play, Oriole Park at Camden Yards, Wrigley Field, those are all in the top nine. The Mariners are at the very, very, very bottom. Mm-hmm. So that is real. Even though it feels like, well, other people, Mike Trout can come here and rake. In general, teams, including the Mariners and other teams, do not hit exceptionally well at T-Mobile. However, you're kind of struggling everywhere, man.
Yeah.
Even when you go to hitter-friendly parks, even when you go to other parks on the road, you have the fewest doubles in baseball, a rate down from 2023. You have the fifth fewest hits per game, which is keeping company with the Cardinals, A's, White Sox, and Reds. Now, you are better on the road than at home, but that's also down from 2023. You have the seventh worst slugging percentage, which if you're going to strike out this much, you better be able to slug, and they're not. And you're averaging the fourth fewest runs per game. I don't know about you guys, but not every single Mariner series has been at T-Mobile. This is happening at other parks, too. So why does the offense struggle so much, and why are they striking out so much? It is very, very hard for me to isolate a park factor and say that's why, and not wonder if it's execution, mental hurdles, and something to do with the message being delivered. And the only reason I say that is not because I have a deep understanding of the Mariners' offensive philosophy and in the information that's being communicated to players. It's that very natural thing we all do, which is if every kid in a class is failing, what if it's the teacher? Mm-hmm. What if it's the test? If you are by far striking out more than any other team in baseball, well, wait a minute. You got some different players on this club right now. This isn't last year's club.
I think it's all the above. I think I don't lean too much into the marine layer, but it's there, so you got to talk about it. I don't, like you mentioned, I don't know what they're, how they're being coached to approach their plate appearances. We don't know. They're not going to tell us. It's a dugout at 1 o'clock. Guarantee if we ask a question, they're going to give us a generic controlled zone and put the ball in play. Makes sense. Most teams do that. You know what I do? I look at this hitting and pitching relationship the Mariners have. And, you know, it's kind of like my wife and I. Some people might look at us and be like, they don't match. She's so much prettier than him or whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't match. The way that these guys pitch doesn't match the way that they are hitting. We talk about hits per game, okay? Hits per game. The Mariners, about 7, 26th in the league. Pitching, they're giving up at about 6. That's the best in the MLB. Doesn't match.
Slim margin.
All right? Runs per game. Okay, 3.57, 27th in the league. Pitching, they're giving up 2.9, second best in the league. Walks per game, all right, you're getting about 3.2 per game, 14th. Pitching, they're walking about 2 per game, 3rd in the league. Strikeouts per game, all right, a little over 10 per game. That's the 30th in the league. Pitching, 9.15, 5th best in the league. It just don't match. All right, now why doesn't it match? That's been the question of the year. How can you match this pitching staff with this hitting or with these hitters out there and make them just come together? We named all these reasons or conspiracies why it's not getting done, but it all comes down to execution. Like, what's the approach? We don't know what the approach is. I know that teams are figuring out that Julio's going to chase low and inside. So what we're going to do, we're going to get ahead in the count, going to get low and inside on him. No matter what the pitch is, he's going to go after it. The scouting report is out. Word on the street is, with this team, at least the last few games I've watched, man, you get ahead in the count, you give them a little four-seamer rising at the top of the zone, they're going to swing at that thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of all this stuff. But when it's all said and done, what's the message that's being communicated, and are these guys executing? They're not executing. We don't know the message. That's why we're sitting here in the middle in the gray area saying, all right, let's throw some things and see what sticks against this wall to try to figure out what's going on.
So I put this question out to X.com, the same one that you're answering. And there was some similar sentiment, but let's see. One person said, so I said, why has the offense struggled so much? One person said, every single move they made to their lineup this offseason was a clear and obvious downgrade. I think having worse players leads to worse results. I don't actually agree with that. I think that when you look at Teo, with the Dodgers. He has like 8 or 9 home runs, but I think he's still striking out at relatively the same rate. So I don't know that I can look at that and say, you know, while I wish I had that slugging in this lineup, I have not minded at all the idea of bringing in the players they did. Jorge Polanco striking out significantly more than he does on average. Mm-hmm. Same with Garver, who Joe Doyle mentioned yesterday, like 10 percentage points higher. You added good players. They're just not playing like it here, which is weird. Someone else said clearly the marine layer is causing swings and misses, making a joke about how a marine layer doesn't cause you to swing and miss. It's not affecting your swing decisions.
It's not. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. You can keep expanding on that because it's, again, you mentioned the marine layer, but you also said, look, there's so much that goes into this, and execution was a big one for you.
Yeah. I like when I'm watching games and they zoom in on the outfield and center fielder takes his hat off, looks in his cap, and there's a like scouting report and what these guys like to do. There's scouting reports for all of these guys. You go into the game, you know who your starting pitcher is going to be. You can anticipate who's coming out the bullpen depending on the situation. There's a scouting report. So it seems like from my athletic background, when I get that scouting report, I'm going to go into that situation and rely on that. But then once I get in and I see something different, I got to adjust. It's like when all week we prepared for a 3-4 defense, they come out in a 4-3. Now our offensive line is scrambling on the sideline trying to figure out, okay, what adjustments are we going to make? All week long, we've prepared for a cover 2 type of look, and now they're in single high type of look. We got to change our game plan and how we attack things. It seems like they're relying too much on the scouting report, and then they get slapped in the face once or two times and like, oh, snap, so what do I do? Now I'm going to try to do too much and start chasing these pitches. My question is, too, is, like, who do we expect Julio to be, right? Because I'm looking at his numbers, and I go, all right, what are realistic expectations? All right, best of the best, Ohtani. You look at Ohtani and say, all right, Julio's not going to be Ohtani, but he's the best of the best. How does he stack up to an Ohtani? I look at Julio's chase rate is at 35%. Ohtani's at 27%. His chase contact is at 48%. Ohtani's at 64%. His whiff is at 30%. Ohtani's is at 24%. I'm like, all right, well, Ohtani does a better job at not chasing, and when he does chase, he's making better contact. Not fair to compare him to Ohtani, right? Why would you do that, bum? That's not fair.
Why would you do that, bum?
Right? So I go, okay, let's go down the list a little bit. Juan Soto, you know,
okay.
a little
having
more
a
comparable.
Year, by the way.
Baller.
Yeah,
let's not get it twisted.
He's balling right now.
Baller. All right, his chase rate. 16% chase contact, 54% whiff is at 20, all better. I go, still not fair, Bob. Why are you doing that to Julio? Let's go all the way down to Michael Harris. We just saw him with the Atlanta Braves. His chase is at 45%. His chase contact is at 54%. His whiff is at 28%. He still has a better average on-base percentage, OPS, and strikes out less than Julio. I just use Julio as an example because he's just the best player. There's Rojas out there who has a chase of 18%, a contact of 52%. Cal has a chase of 30%. Contact at 52%. All right, these are all numbers, and we use them to compare these guys. So now I'm looking at the team, and I go, do we lower expectations for Julio? Because we feel like in the summertime he's going to get going. We don't have the answers to how he's approaching his ABs, but we're looking at him as a savior, as a guy who's supposed to get all this done, and he's just not getting it done.
Yeah.
What is that? That's a question that we will continue to ask until we actually see it. But he just needs to produce a bit more.
I have so many theories coming in here. They're coming in too fast to read. 360, you guys are missing the obvious. The team's cursed. Look, I can't explain
What's
that.
The
I
curse?
Can't, yeah, I can't find the logic behind that one, but I also can't argue with you. 253, why don't you tell it like it is? Ownership went cheap and they need to go. When I look at the lineup, we have complained before about wanting to see more talent here and wanting to see decision makers with this team spend a little bit more. We've also talked about the issues this team has had with developing bats, and some of that has been running into bad injury luck with Kyle and Evan, right? However, to me, the big question mark is not necessarily like, oh, if they had better players here, they'd be amazing. Like, that's a separate conversation. The question mark is, you got rid of players, Kelnick, Teo, Gino, that all struggled with strikeouts. And and one of those was like clearly a salary dump. But right. Like, you got rid of these guys. You brought in players that have struck out less. But now they're striking out more than they ever have. So is the rest of your lineup. Julio's not playing well. The question is, why are the pieces that you have here The pieces you have, let's not compare it to what you could have. Why are the pieces that you have striking out this much? Like, if you would have gone to get this amazing offseason acquisition, let's say you brought in Chapman, you know, maybe he wouldn't be struggling as much defensively here. I don't know. Maybe he would. Would he be striking out even more? Like, that's where I'm kind of stumped, is it yeah. sure seems like you have a group of people that are struggling offensively just like they did last year, and I am trying to figure out the reason why, and I refuse to believe that the marine layer explains it all away.
No, it doesn't.
So I think that logic would apply if they had a bad group of players that hadn't changed, but that's not the case.
And the most frustrating part about this is that they're still second in their division, a half game behind the Rangers at this point. And you look at the offensive production and you say, all right, they're going to be able to win some ball games because you're going to rely on the guys on the mound to get her done. I mean, Castillo retired with the first 11 batters that he saw yesterday. Eventually, you know, this is a good team, a Twins team that's playing some good baseball at this point. Eventually, you knew they're going to get on base. They're going to have runners in score position, and you're going to have to make some things happen. The worst feeling is when you get down two or three runs and you feel like it's just not going to happen because you know that this team isn't great from coming from behind and winning. I just said yesterday, they got one ninth inning come from behind win. They got five on the year, right? That's the bottom, like, three or four in this league. This is just a profile of this team right now. Can they win enough ball games to get into the playoffs and be competitive? I think they can, but I also feel like there's enough talent to where they shouldn't be in this position. So where do we point? I think it's a combination of everything. I think the philosophy at the plate has to be evaluated. I think the players' execution have to be evaluated, and a whole bunch of other things and data points and all that stuff that we just don't get. Safe to say it's not flowing the way they thought it should. But they are winning some ball games. They're just doing it in a stressful way.
I could talk about this endlessly. We'll get back to a little bit at 10:30. Right now, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Seahawks created nearly $2 million in cap space yesterday by restructuring Mike Jackson's contract. What's the real headline?
So is this kind of like making a $50 payment on a maxed out credit card?
Yeah,
pretty much.
You know when you're like,
keep throwing a couple bucks at it.
Being an adult. 2 weeks later, wait, why is it overdrafted?
Yeah, that's essentially what that is. Yeah. I think Mike Jackson is a central part in this defense, honestly. I'm going to explain it more in four down territory. But this is a guy that you want around, but that's exactly how it feels, man. You're just making a little dent, you know, making a little progress in your payment. But every dollar counts. And, you know, you ever been to you remember back in the day you were in college, man, you got like $15 left on that card, and you know your meal is going to be $12, but then something gets withdrawn from that, and you go and your card gets declined. It's embarrassing. So they're making sure that card don't get declined, man. Make a dent in that payment, and make sure you can go ahead and get your value meal.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Timberwolves, even without Rudy Gobert, the Stifle Tower, blew out the Nuggets 106-80 to go up 2-0 in their series. What's the real headline?
Are the T-Wolves about to win this thing? Something Curtis Rogers was wondering.
Dude, man.
They look really good
it's
right
legit.
Now.
It's legit.
What do you guys think?
I think because of their defense, just like in any other sport, right, that defense got to lock down and win some moments and win some games for you. Because of their defense, they are looking good. And Anthony Edwards ain't scared of nothing. 22 years old, in the league, talking that talk, walking that walk. And it's kind of funny to see Karl-Anthony Towns kind of take a back seat and say, look, this is your squad, man. I'll be the big man to rebound and do my thing. But when it's all said and done, Anthony Edwards needs the ball in his hands. They did it without Rudy Gobert. Question to you, Stacey.
Mm-hmm.
I asked my wife this last night, too.
Okay.
I go, if you were in labor and I had a playoff game to play.
Okay.
Would you mind if I just showed up after the game? And she was like, yeah, go ahead and play the game and show up afterwards. I know Rudy was getting some flack by some podcasts for not showing up after the game. I get why he would show up. Me personally, I'm like, babe, let's go get this game too real quick and I'll be back.
I agree. I think that some fans are overlooking that it's not about supporting his partner. It may also be that he wants to be there for the birth of his child. That for him, that's something mm-hmm. he doesn't want to miss. And I think people often see it as like, it's paternity leave. She can do it on her own. What are you talking about? Go see her after. And it's like, but what if for him, he thinks like, I might not get to experience this again.
That's
like,
first
this is
kid,
a
too.
Monumental life moment, the birth of my first child. Like, I want to hold my baby, you know, after he's born. I want to be with my wife. Like, I think we too often see it as like, oh, the husband's just supporting the wife. And it's like, but this is monumental for him too. He just became a dad.
I'm at game two. Me and the wife decided. I'm there. I'll hop on a flight. I'll see you in a minute.
That's a family of athletes right there.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. Today is the NHL draft lottery. The Kraken hold the eighth best odds for the number one pick at just 6%. What's the real headline?
The Kraken are even mediocre among the league's mediocre.
Goodness gracious.
We're so mid.
Oh, we're so mid.
good luck. May the odds ever be in your favor. I hope we get that number one pick. What are you going to do with it? But we all know what the Kraken is deeper than just getting the number one pick in the draft. Yeah, you got to do that. Young man will probably play in the minors for a little bit down at Coachella. You got to develop him and bring him up and surround him by talent. Who's the coach? Let's start there. Who's the coach of this team?
Oh, yeah. They got to figure that out. The projected number one pick this year is Boston U center Macklin Celebrini. Now, hear me out.
Macklin, sounds pretty good.
Kind of like Macklemore.
Celebrini, celebrate.
Thank you.
The pick.
I'm putting the pieces together right now. The yarn, the red yarn, red string is
it covering
everything.
It sounds like he could be potentially special. Maybe not to the level of Connor Bedard, but
yeah.
Sounds like he could be an 18-year-old in the NHL.
360. I was there for my wife. Totally traumatic. 1 of 10. Would not recommend. Kid is cute, though. Well, I'm sure your wife had a tougher time with that one.
Yeah.
Safe to say.
Can you imagine the husband being there like, oh, babe, man, this is tough. This is tough for me right now.
I don't excuse myself.
I don't do well with blood and medical stuff. This is just, I got to walk out. I would be livid. I'd be livid. We have a lot of people, Bump, sounding off about, hey, you know, what are your theories as to why the offense has struggled? And I feel like there's two separate conversations happening. Although lineup and investment in the lineup is a factor, to me, I'm wondering why even when you change players, even if it's a lateral move, you brought in players that struck out less than the pieces that were already here, and then they started striking out more. You know what? That's what I'm stuck on. I think the Mariners should, in general, spend more and invest more in their team. That's a separate thing. I don't disagree with you. But to me, offensive struggles aren't entirely connected with the investment that you've made in your offense. I don't know why this club is striking out as much as they are when you specifically found free agent pieces, whether or not they were a lateral move, that struck out less.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. On paper, it makes no sense. So that leads me to believe internally, there's some things going on. Mentally, there's some things going on. So they got a lot to figure out.
Why do you guys think talent is there? We don't have a single guy in their lineup who's been a career 300 average, 30-plus home run guy. I think Julio is exceptionally talented. I think Haniger can be an all-star when he's healthy. I think JP can be a really solid piece in the lineup. I think Polanco can be a plus guy. Like, it again, this is a lineup that just needs to be average. That's all we're calling for. C's get degrees. That's the approach that I want for the Mariners offense. Right now they're failing. So how do you get above that?
How? That is the million-dollar question. Let's figure it out.
Well, you're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. To begin the show, we went over a couple theories as to why the Mariners offense has struggled so much. But look, there's a big one that we didn't mention, and a former player talked about it in a recent podcast appearance. That's next.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
All right, well, Bump and I talked about a couple different theories as to why the Mariners offense is struggling so much. And we had you guys send in so many theories on the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. But look, there's one that we didn't cover. Former big league pitcher Trevor May, appeared on the Athletics Rates and Barrels podcast hosted by Eno Saris. May retired from baseball at the end of the 2023 season, and he has a theory as to why Seattle's hitters struggle so much. He thinks it could be a batter's eye issue.
Guys mention things about how they don't like hitting there, and a lot of the mentions, especially from like right-handed pop, is, you know, the ball doesn't go as far as I want it to go. Like, balls I get are being caught up against the wall, but that doesn't explain the miss as much. and doesn't explain how some guys could hit there and otherwise couldn't. So there has to be something funky, something you can't put your finger on, but you just feel uncomfortable in the box, because I've heard it from just too many guys at this point to be a coincidence or to be isolated. And we were discussing this, and I apologize if I'm taking this from Eno, but like the batter's eye is on an angle. Was it Beltre who said, I could never feel like the pitcher was, I couldn't line it up?
That's what Teoscar said, yeah.
So he's talking about the angles of T-Mobile Park in general, which faces a different direction than other parks. It's just got some weird issues with shadows.
But the batter's eye there is angled farther away on the left side than and closer on the right side. You know, there's shadows and there's some sun, especially when the roof's open. The sun can shine kind of up and over from the west side earlier in a game. So like it's kind of going like first three innings or whatever, you can have a little bit of a glare out there, which isn't great. And it's like that pretty much all summer because of the way it's the orientation of the stadium.
And there are a couple different ballpark factors. We know that players have wanted them bumped to like close the roof on cold days. Mm-hmm. Obviously, shadows can play a role. Trevor May says that batter's eye being at an angle, in his opinion, he has heard from players and in his own experience, like you can just kind of feel that weirdness of the angle. Again, it's just a theory. It's just something being thrown out there. And the thing with all of these theories is no one theory is entirely responsible for
it. No, they're all contributing to this ordeal that we continue to discuss as we watch the Mariners struggle at the plate. I just Googled a picture of the view of T-Mobile Park from the batter's box just to kind of feel it.
Yeah.
Now, your boy couldn't hit anything that wasn't a fastball, so I'm no expert in this situation. but I'm looking at it, and the picture that I got, you see the shadows off top. It doesn't feel like it's a clear view. There are some things that are true. In basketball, when these athletes play in March Madness and they get to these venues that are huge and you have this glass backboard with a hoop on behind it, mm-hmm. I've been told and have read there's some adjusting that goes on because your perception of it has changed. You're used to having this this close, dense environment where the student section is behind it and your eyes just lock in. It's a natural thing. Me, when I played football in certain stadiums, I didn't like returning punts because it's an east-west stadium. The sun is jacking me up. The angles are different. And I remember playing in, I want to say it was in Stanford. There was a big shadow that went across half of the field. And I'm watching the football get kicked off the punter's foot. And I'm trying to track it. It just changes your process when it comes to things. So I'm not saying this is the reason why these guys are struggling, but I'm also saying visually, it's not the most pleasant thing to look at. It could be one of the many things contributing to this. And if players are saying it, you got to give it some type of respect. This, I mean, Trevor May is not talking to Bob at the beer league. He's talking to guys who do this for real, and they're mentioning this.
Again, this is not explaining their strikeout rate as a team. It's not explaining why they had 14 strikeouts in Minnesota, not in their own park in front of this batter's eye. What this is like we said to start the show, tinfoil hat conspiracy theory time. What are all the reasons, all the reasons that would explain offensive struggles for the Mariners? We've got people saying, hey, it's the Marine layer. Yep. We've got people saying, hey, it's some kind of offensive philosophy or approach. We've got people saying it's the hitting coach. It's the hitting coach staff, even though they've replaced a lot of those people this past year. We've got people saying it's the pieces that they've added, that they don't, you know, add significant bats. And so why would you expect significant improvement? What stumps me then is why you have your good bats. Like, I think Haniger's a good player. I think Julio's a great player that struggle just as much.
Right.
Like, I'm just stumped. It's not, I don't think the explanation is obvious. And you can say, well, other people hit in T-Mobile, but we know from StatCast, based on stats over this year and last, and I'm sure if you went previous seasons, that T-Mobile is not a good park on average for any team.
Yeah. I think another factor, too, and we're focusing on T-Mobile, and these dudes ain't playing T-Mobile yesterday. Over there in Minnesota, I think a little bit of the unknown, too, with Simeon Woods Richardson on the mound as well. There's not an extensive scouting report on this young man. In 2022, he played in one game. 2023, he played in one game. So it's not like you have a lot of information on this guy. I think that factors into it as well. So when they're not at home, when they are on the road, all right, what are the factors there? That's where I start looking into philosophy, coaching, approach, and execution. Because, all right, now we're not at home. There's no Marine layer like that. There's no batter's eye. Nothing slanted over there. as far as I know, Polanco had himself a couple all-star seasons over there in Minnesota as well. He should be comfortable there, right? So once you hit the road, I think it just comes down to your philosophy. At home, you mentioned it. It is the Bay Area stadiums or parks. You got this one up here. There's another one, I think Pittsburgh. And guess what? Pittsburgh's by the water, too. Parks that are by the water, it's going to be the flight of the ball will be expected.
ABC level, yeah.
Like when I play golf in the winter, my drive don't go as far. Simple as that. And I play golf in the spring and in the summer, that thing's going to go a bit further. That stuff is real. On the road, what's the problem? That's where I started looking at execution, coaching, philosophy, approach. I wish we had all the answers to that. And the thing that we keep hearing is control the zone, control the zone. Yeah, everybody wants to do that.
Yeah.
All right, but what down to the nuts and bolts, what's really going on with this thing? Because these guys should be producing a bit more.
A common answer on the Mac and Jack's text line is that, oh, you're getting bargain bin players. Again, I still contend that it's two separate conversations. One is you should invest even more in your team. To me, that's just true. But doesn't fully explain why even different players that you brought in or players that should be great really tend to struggle offensively.
Yeah.
Why they have really slow starts to the season. You know what I mean? Like, it's, to me, why is Jorge Polanco striking out more than he ever has?
Mm-hmm.
Why is Mitch Garver striking out more than he has?
That's the thing. Like, these guys come over here and all of a sudden they're striking
now,
out more.
If I was saying, hey, the Mariners are near the bottom of the league in home runs, the Mariners are just middling. They're 15th in average. Your response could fairly be, well, check their payroll and tell me if they're higher than 15th. Mm-hmm. Then that would be a completely fair response. But if I'm saying, hey, the Mariners are 30th in their strikeout rate and they have players that are striking out more than they ever have, why? That's a separate conversation.
They're on pace to strike out more this year than last year.
That's what I'm saying. To me, that is, payroll is a small factor there. A big factor when you talk about like them not getting to the postseason over 20 years, right? Minus, obviously, more one recent season. But if you're talking about offensive struggles, strikeout rate alone, I don't know that payroll's a huge part of that because you're looking at just those isolated pieces.
I know we got to go real quick. Mm-hmm. The question I have is if these guys are not striking out as much but still aren't winning ball games, aren't producing runs, then what do we point to? There's always going to be something to point to, but the main thing that you decided to get rid of just isn't happening. That's where the frustration comes from. These guys are squaring it up and hitting the ball hard and putting into play, and you're just not producing. You're going to say eventually something's going to happen. It's the strikeouts. You're not even giving opportunities to produce runs or whatnot. So it's frustrating, but this is who this team is. I don't see it changing drastically anytime soon.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Are trade targets emerging for the Mariners? That's next.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
I'm sorry. What is this? A trade in May? The Marlins and Padres getting into things going here. So let's wonder whether or not the Mariners might make a trade. That's exactly what the Athletic's Jim Bowden did. He wrote a column about recent trades he'd like to see. Trades this time of the year are exceptionally rare. They have happened, obviously, just this past week, a couple in years past, but it's typically not something that happens. Jim knows that. You guys know that. We know that. But let's talk about it. His theory, his proposition, is that Mets trade first baseman Pete Alonso, the polar bear, to the Mariners for, tell me how you'd feel about this bump, right-hander Emerson Hancock and first baseman Ty France.
Man, now, I'm emotionally attached to both of these guys because we covered them over the years. Emerson Hancock, more recently. The thing about Hancock is that you still got Wu waiting in the wings. You know that he is going to be available here pretty soon. Curtis brought it up yesterday. Like, why haven't they promoted him yet? We're still waiting, but it sounds like he's doing what he's supposed to do. Where is he at? Is he in Everett or Tacoma?
Tacoma.
Tacoma, thank you. The Ty France one is what gets me a little bit. It gets me a little bit because of the emotional attachment, you know, his story. He was an all-star one year. He's battled through. When this team is playing well, typically Ty France is getting on base and doing what he's supposed to do. But what is this team missing at this point? You are missing just a guy who is going to demolish meatballs when they are tossed up there. And that is exactly who Alonso is. His averages isn't great. On-base percentage isn't great. Slugging isn't great. OPS is cool. 710 right now. But what would he do when he's here?
Hit bombs. Hit dingers.
And that's the thing that entices me. I would have more trouble parting with France than I would Emerson Hancock just because of the rotation. And I feel like France has the capabilities to get going and be a catalyst. I would entertain it, though. He's a three-time All-Star. He's got 8 bombs in a year so far, 16 RBIs, and 31 strikeouts. I believe Julio has 44. We got a bunch of guys in the 30s. You can take those strikeouts if you're going to get RBIs and you're going to get bombs. Mm-hmm. So we would have to sit down and have several glasses of wine and really try to figure this thing out, right? Because this is a tough one for me. Emerson, okay, I can see that. Big us, Emerson, respect. Love what you're doing. Ty will be a bit rough for me, but I would understand if they were to go through or execute something like this.
If Ty's defense was just a bit better, if Julio was performing, I'd be like, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I love having the depth that Emerson Hancock would bring you because you know that, again, knock on wood, you may have another injury to your rotation. The Mariners are, I think, the only team to stick with just their 5 starters for the season. They've been very fortunate there. That's not something that's altogether common. So I like having the idea of a starter that can be quickly brought up, even if he's not as great as your others. And I also, you know, would feel like the offense doesn't need to be elite. It just needs to be good. And mm-hmm. if Julio was performing better, I think the offense would be good. It's not. He's mm-hmm. not. So I'm very tempted by this trade. I think I'd pull the trigger on it. The one thing I'll say is Luis Arraez was traded to the Padres. The Padres made a deal, gave up a ton in the deal. And the Marlins, I wouldn't say are desperate, but are far more willing to tear it down to the studs than are the Mets, even if the Mets are struggling. Mm-hmm. The Mets have a type of public pressure, including from their owner, Steve Cohen, that I don't think the Marlins have. And even though there have been long talks predating this conversation about moving on from Pete Alonso, I don't know if that's a trade that could happen now. Maybe I look like an idiot and they actually do get a trade done and bring in a bat right now. Mm-hmm. But I think that the trade of Arraez to the Padres is unique for both teams, with the Padres brass being like, we need to save our jobs, and the Marlins being like, we're kind of out of this.
And the other question I have with this Alonso deal is he'd be a rental, right?
Right.
You'd have to convince him, like, hey, man, let's get this thing rolling.
Would you make the deal for a rental if he was moving on? If you knew he was moving on?
If I felt like this was a World Series type of team, that's when I go back to the beginning of the season. We're getting all these guys saying, hey, look out for this Mariners team, man. It could be World Series type of team. I don't see that right now. Just right now. In what, May 7th, I don't see World Series. I see potential playoff team for sure. Is Alonso the piece that makes you, that catapults you into a World Series type of team? Without Julio playing the way that we're used to seeing him play, I still think this is a playoff type of team. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it comes down to. Are you willing to go? This isn't even going all in. This is putting a bunch of chips in there. You're not all in. Putting a bunch of chips in there and saying, okay, let's see what happens. History, resume tells me the Mariners ain't going to do that. They're not into making these big moves. They're into sticking with their guys and developing and promoting guys from within their system and seeing what happens there. I'm intrigued, though. I'm intrigued. I'm not quite ready to pull the trigger.
I think this could be a World Series team if the offense was better. You have the best starting rotation in baseball. Pete Alonso hasn't hit fewer than 35 home runs since 2020. No Mariners player hit 35 home runs last year.
Yeah.
Curtis.
Well, and think about the messaging that this would send the clubhouse when last year, when the Mariners sent Paul Sewald to the Diamondbacks, we heard it from every Mariner this offseason being like, we thought we had a shot if Paul Sewald had stuck around and we could have made the playoffs. And that trade signaled to us that ownership didn't want to really go all in. They wanted to, you know, kind of fix things on the fly. Whereas I think a trade for Pete Alonso, yeah, he's got his flaws as a hitter for sure. Still strikes out a ton, but he hits bombs for sure. Acquiring Pete Alonso would send a much different message to the clubhouse than trading away Paul Sewald did last year. It would say, hey, we're getting you reinforcements.
Exactly.
Here you go. Like, let's do this.
Well, and look, if part of the conversation that we had to open the show was, okay, what if in addition to a marine layer, in addition to a batter's box, in addition to a philosophy, part of the execution issue is pressure and part of the execution issue is mental. You know what would make me feel a little more confident?
What's that?
A vote of confidence from my GM that we're a World Series team.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing in a rental is a vote of confidence, as Curtis said, to Curtis's point. I think that there is a mental factor that could be aided by bolstering your club.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's the only way to do that.
No.
Like, you know, getting into a hot streak can do that. Getting a couple base hits can do that. Like, there are cheaper solutions to getting confidence up for any player. Having a hot month, you know. I think I'd make the move. I love Ty France. I love the depth that Emerson Hancock brings to this rotation. I am very concerned about the offense.
Yeah, you need a spark. And maybe, have you seen Rookie of the Year, the movie?
Absolutely.
Yes, I have.
He's Alonzo would be Hito. Remember Hito?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be Alonzo. Go ahead and get Hito. I'd be here for it.
Be growling at
now,
the camera.
Rookie of the Year is about a baseball player.
Correct. How old is this baseball player?
Well, he's a rookie.
Well, yes. Facts. But Ichiro was a rookie at 27.
He's 13.
Close.
Yeah.
12.
Okay. 12, yeah.
Okay, I knew it was about a kid. And he becomes...
Name the team he pitches for.
The Rockies?
No.
The Cardinals?
No.
The Mets?
No.
The Yankees?
No.
The Cubs.
That was my next. I was just about to say that. We're going to stick with baseball. ESPN's David Schoenfield joining us next.